Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios this Tuesday morning. Joining me for part three of the podcast series, Driven Brennan Hudson. Brennan, crap, man. You got in some trouble after last week's episode. Jeez. I didn't even get a chance to see that post, except in the moderator forum. What the heck was that?
Which one are you talking about? Did I make a couple? Heck, I don't even remember yesterday.
No. It wasn't by you. Some guy listened to the podcast.
Oh, on the Duck South deal?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. Hey, I'm just an old Southern boy, and I make comments, and I guess I'm a little ignorant, but I didn't mean to offend anybody. It was just a normal, you know, little joke about coming and shooting your ducks, and you pay me a little money for it, and I guess it got taken the wrong way. I don't know. I saw that guy made that post about it, and I apologize if I offended anybody, but it was just a comment. I don't know what the heck. And by the time I saw it and commented and basically said Happy Easter, and, huh?
No, please don't apologize, and I'm not saying that to offend. I'm not. God, I hate that word offend. I'm not saying that to make that other guy that listened to the podcast mad. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But listen, we live in a day and age where everything you say seems to offend somebody. You know, in the old days, we just stopped doing business with those businesses or people that we disagreed with. We just went on about our life. People are who they are.
Yeah, Rocky, it is. People can take a comment or anything they're listening to, even and text is the worst. You can text somebody something, and you know, being that you can't hear the sound of voice and the tone in it, you can take stuff totally. And I've been guilty of it before too. But by God, you know, I'm not. I don't know. It's sad. It's sad that every little thing gets critiqued, and it's really hurting the hunting industry as well. Not alone with, you know, just everything in life, but the hunting industry is getting, you know, too many people worried about what everybody else is saying. Too many people worried about what everybody else is doing, and trying to find wrong in everything, especially jealousy. But I don't think that had anything to do with it. I think, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of like you, just go on with life. And hell, I shouldn't even probably got on there and commented, but it kind of ate at me for a second. But
there's a lot of people, according to the picture that I saw. And I was dealing with family Easter on Sunday when that post was made. But according to the pictures that I saw, there's a lot of people that kind of stood on the same side as me. Man, good grief. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, if you live in your life like that, hey man, if that's what you want to do to be happy, by God, go for it. But it's a shame people can do, you know, make comments like that just over a simple joke. You know what I mean? So, but like I said, hey, if you don't like it, turn it off. You know what I mean? So it's that easy.
I think that it kind of goes back to what you originally kind of said in this. That part of our world is starting to invade the hunting industry.
Yeah.
And it's today, the age that we live in, you know, the people that are making some little minute money, I can tell everybody that's listening to this, I'm probably going to shock you. There's not any money to be made in the hunting industry. Nope. unless you invent something, you know, there's no really money, or you become, what's his name on the Outdoor Channel that gets paid to make a show, the guy that hunts everywhere in the world.
Jim Shockey.
Jim Shockey. That's really the only, or you invented a reality TV show like Duck Commander.
Yep.
So, what's my point in saying all this? I see so many people fighting to get in an industry where there's nothing really there in the first place. I've got to get this perfect shot to put on Instagram. The perfect moment. I get so sick of that crap. Oh, my God. I like to hang out with people that are who they are. I'll tell you this right now.
You know,
Brennan Hudson, I'll give you some examples. Brennan Hudson is the guy you listen to every week. Ramsey Russell, he is who he is. Now, Ramsey can get a little promotional for some, but dude, he is who he is. That is his life. That's his business. That's how he put groceries on the table. Pat Pitt is who he is. But these people that want to be politically correct and have the perfect shot, that's not freaking hunting. That is not the hunting that I know.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to say this, and you kind of hear me out. You know, let me try to think how to say this, but, you know, growing up, you know, nowadays it's all about the image, you know, the image you're putting off for somebody else to see. And, you know, I get heck from the guys I work with and in Oklahoma and stuff for posting stuff all the time. And, you know, there was a time that when I was growing up, you know, I was fortunate enough to have my family, you know, owning some ground back home. And I used to make posts and stuff with stories, like used to actually take time and put stories in. I kind of got away from it, which I shouldn't have, because that's where my roots come, is sitting around at deer camp every weekend listening to your grandpa and uncle tell stories. And now the day and age of story, people see you posting stuff, and it's like, I don't know, the young age, the old young generation of people was kind of a pictures and a little short comment, and like just trying to probe at the industry to get in, like somehow. I don't know how to really say it. You get where I'm coming from, or am I not making sense? Because I don't know. People, there's some people that need, that deserve to be in it. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying I'm one of them. I'm not saying anybody, but. And then there's some people that just kind of, I don't know, like you're saying, they just want in it so bad, but there's not money to be made putting pictures on Instagram and Facebook. No, I do it because, of course, you know my business and to keep the books full. But I definitely understand what you're saying when it comes to making money in the industry. I don't know if that made sense or not, but.
No, it goes back to everyday life and social media creating this image. This image that it's really. Listen, if you go all the way back to kindergarten, the people that at the end of the day that have long-term popularity, let's use that term popularity. I know that it's not something we do in adult life, but the people that have long-term popularity or long-term stay are the people that's real. Not the people that create an image that is short-term. That's short-term for them.
Yep.
And there, let me just tell you something. For posting the crap and all the hashtags that they're putting up there, some of them may get a little money. Most of them's getting some free product. That's it.
Yeah. And I'm guilty of some of it, Rocky. You know, just because the outfitting side of it. But I definitely see what see where you're getting at there.
Why, you know, just like Phil Robertson, you know why his stay has been so long in his reign as one of the elders of the hunting industry has been so long? It's who he is. It's who he is in real life. It's who he is on camera. He tells it like it is. Will Primos is the same guy.
if you're gonna be somebody on Facebook and Instagram or social media, it needs to be the person you are every day. You know what I mean? It's not just a let's put it on there and pretend I'm somebody I'm not. And I get real irritated. Heck, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they made a comment about somebody, and I said, you know, what's aggravating is I've worked hard for where I'm at, and there's a lot of people that deserve, you know, there's a lot of people that have just worked hard, and then you've got, and I'm not picking on women. I mean, there's a lot of girls out there that can hunt and hold their own, and there's a lot of guys that can't. But you take these people, and they pretend to be somebody they're not. And they, you know, like you said, they can get on 1,000 different pro staffs, and then all of a sudden they just land this deal and they're in the industry and being this one person. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm the same person. When I was 5, 6 years old, this is what I want to do. This is what I was born to do. And this is why I'm here. You know what I mean? I truly believe that, but I don't know. Some of those people just, let me just be this one person just for Instagram and Facebook. No, I might post stuff on there, but that's who I am. I've always been, you know. I don't know.
You think those guys that we mentioned, you think that they sit around and wait for the perfect moment to capture that picture for Instagram? If they do, they're murmuring and cussing under their breath. If they have to.
Yeah. Oh, man.
They know that that's not what built their business. They built their business off of just who they are.
Yep. That's true. You can be who you want to be when you're around somebody or away from somebody through a keyboard, but you better be able to hold your own, you know, especially if you're an outfitting world and trying to book hunts. You better better be able to, you know, be that person that you prolong to be, or, you know, say who you are on through a keyboard, just because, you know, people read through the bull crap real easy. You know, especially in today's age, there's 1,000 different outfitters, 1,000 different people they can go with, and you better be able to hold your own, you know, especially if you want to get in the hunting industry. Because I'm going to tell you, it don't matter how many hunts you run, it don't matter how many products you sell, or, you know, it don't matter. You're not going to get in here and be a millionaire.
I'll say this, to be a successful outfitter, because that's what this whole podcast is about, driven to be successful, like you've been guiding. You got to have two things. I found this out over guiding for 22 years. You either love people, which is about 60 or 70% of it anyway. You better love to sit around and listen to people tell their stories. It's not about you telling your stories. You better be willing to sit around and listen to them about their everyday life. But number two, 30% of it, you better be a stone cold killer that you kill them every single day. And let me tell you, it doesn't happen every day when you're guiding. It does not. So you better like people.
Yep. And you better be able to know how to make their, you know, there's going to be days that you're sitting out there that you thought was going to be just a slam dunk, and you get the clients all fired up, and then it don't work. You better be ready to know how to handle people and know how to make it, you know, telling stories. And, you know, there's been plenty of times sitting there, and I'm not the best caller in the world, but I'm sitting there and teach a kid, or hell, this year teach a grown man how to blow a spec call. You know what I mean? There's certain little things, and I can't tell all my tricks, but there's certain little things you can do that you got to figure out. You got to read the people and figure out how can I make this that hunt of the lifetime? Even if they do, there's 10 of them, they shoot 20 birds. You know what I mean? There's a lot of little stuff that people don't see, as an outfitter. You know, they see the outside of killing every day. It's not about you anymore. It's really not. You know, and that's like in Canada, you know, you can't shoot with clients up there legally. You have to be a designated guide. Well, you know, people always want to be a guide and an outfitter. Let me tell you, you get up there and start guiding about 30, 40 days in, and you start realizing you ain't pulling a trigger every day. You better love it. You better love people and love hunting. I mean, because that's it'll get to you. You know, those days of hunting with your buddies are over. You know what I mean? So.
Well, I the thing that I've learned about life, no matter who you talk to in this world, you got to go into it with an open mind. But everybody in this world, from your garbage man that picks up your garbage every morning to the guy that sits at the big oak desk above New York, as I've hunted with both of them before, I've guided both of them. Both of them have a story. And at the end of the day, your job as an outfitter is to read them, make sure they have give them the best shot to have a successful hunt. And at the end of the day, listen to them. Everybody's got a story.
Yep. And you sit there, ask them what they do for a living. Go into depth of what they do. You know, go into depth of, you know, their life story. Or, you know, you'll always, when you spend time with people, if you can read them, you'll be able to get into their mind and understand where they're coming from. And that's the thing people want. You know, when people go on a hunt, they want to be able to connect with that guide. They want to be able to connect with that outfitter and really, you know what, it just makes it that much, you know, they see who you are, you see who they are, and at the end of the day, hey, the hunting's just extra. The hunting's just, you know, we're there having a good time. And you know, I'll say this, too, as an outfitter, the big thing you can be to clients or any sport that's coming in to hunt with you is honesty. Honesty will get you everywhere in the world with your clients. And I worry sick. I'm telling you what, every hunt I go into, I hate to say I'm probably the least confident out of all of us, even if I know it's a slam dunk, but I'm honest with them. You know what I mean? That honesty with what you've got. I've had clients roll in, I say, look, it's probably not, it, you know, it's not, the hunting's not been good. You're honest with everybody, you'll see a lot better outcome out of a bad hunt than just saying, oh, you know, it's been great. It's great, been great when I get here. Oh, you should have, the famous outfitter word is, you should have been here yesterday. No, don't say that. Just be honest with them. That'll get you a lot farther in life than being that one outfitter that just hopes and promises and tell them what they want to hear. And then they get here and you're just all about taking their money, you know, and there's times, you know, that people will try to take advantage of you. And you know that. I mean, you can't please everybody, but there's times that you're honest and it'll all work out for the better as an outfitter. You won't shut yourself down, but you keep being, when you're dishonest with people, that's where you're going to wind up screwing up as an outfitter or a guide.
Oh man. And speaking of that, boy, everybody thinks that it's glitz and glamour when it comes to Canada. And last year y'all had one of the tougher seasons Canada's probably ever seen, right?
You know, Canada was tough. Canada, I don't know. People think, oh, it's Canada. That's where the birds are coming through. That's where, you know, I don't know how to say it. That's where everything, you know, you just go up there and they're in every field. There's birds in every field. No, that ain't how that works. I mean, if you knew the miles we put on our trucks to find them and stay on them, it's not easy. Yeah, Canada is not, it's not just a cakewalk. You know, there's been days that it's just, you know, scratching your head. And we started off this year and it was the best year. I've only been up there 2 years, going into my third year. And my first year was real, real dry. And, you know, we battled with just not enough water to hold birds, you know, not enough food because it was dry. You have to have water to have good crop. And there just wasn't a lot of food this year, and we were very fortunate for the area I'm in. There was a lot of outfitters struggling in different areas. I don't know why that, you know, I'm still trying to learn the area I'm in. That area, we did really well for what we had, but I'm going to tell you, you know, you always hear the best time to go to Canada is the last 10 days of September and the first 10 days of October. I'm going to tell you, man, it's hunting. You don't know when the best time is, because I've had some great hunts at the very beginning of September 8th, and I've had some that I was scratching my head early October. And you know, we were up there this year, and you know, it started off, we got up there a week or so early, and or I don't know, a week and a half, and and opening weekend. I mean, I was driving an hour and a half to find birds, and that's what we had to do. You know, I can't just cancel hunters just because, you know, I can find birds, but it might be a little ways from the lodge. And, you know, so that first weekend, we're struggling, and we made it work. Everybody went into that second, about the September 15th, and then it starts snowing. And you're like, dadgum, last week it was 90 degrees. Now we got snow this usually, and now you've already got snow geese and little Canadas rolling through. And it's like, man, this isn't supposed to happen till, you know. And I think if you go back and look at the migration reports, and I said that, I was like, man, this migration's 2 weeks ahead. And I'm already starting to think the end of October, wow, what are we going to do? If we're already seeing big, you know, big concentrations of snow geese roll through and little Canadas, and that normally don't happen until the end of September, beginning of October, what is the end of October going to look like? And that's the thing, you know, Rocky, is people come to Canada to kill birds. I mean, that's what they're there for. But they don't see, they show up, they see a hot meal, they see, you know, guides with smiles on their faces, and it comes in that moment where, oh, you know, we're going with a professional, this is going to be great, we're going to smash them. Well, they don't see that, you know, the everyday stress of wondering what's going to happen. So we get about September 15th, and I think that's when Ramsey was up there, and I know that's when he was there, but anyways, it was snow. We had sleet one day. We killed a mess of snow geese one day, and it was just, you know, crazy. I'm like, golly, what's – and then the forecast, snow, 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 and I'm like, golly, you know, I don't think I saw sunshine until, I don't know, October. It was just every day the conditions weren't right, and then so Ramsey's group and them, they roll out, and then we got Sporting Life Kennels, so Marty Roberts, and, you know, I run his dog Preacher out of Oxford. Matter, well, I know you know that, but I run Preacher from Sporting Life Kennels out of Oxford, and they were coming in, and he had a big group rolling in, and it was about September 20th, 21st, 20, somewhere early 20, you know, the 21st of the month, and they roll in, and I think they hunted 2 days. That was the only group I was really, really struggling for ducks. And I mean, just couldn't find them. It was just a couple of days. Just, it don't matter where we went. We were shooting our specs every day. And they roll in, and, you know, they make one or two hunts. First hunt was phenomenal. And I think it was their second day. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff as an outfitter, you don't, you know, you're running every day, 4 o'clock in the morning till the last client goes to bed. It's every day. And you know, in between hunts, you're trying to get birds clean, get birds dealt with, clients are eating, you know, you've got a flat tire, you got an axle, you know, bearing go out on the axle of a trailer, you got, you know, flat tire on your truck, you know, something's always breaking, you know, that as an outfitter. But one of the biggest struggles of the year is, We're rolling along one day, and I tell you, I literally, we hunted geese that morning. The clients went back to the lodge. I stayed around. We got a guide house just north of the lodge, and I'm at the guide house, and I literally, that morning when I walked out of the door, I think it was the day before, we just started stacking up in birds. Everywhere we drove, we were just, you know, had 5, 6, 7 feeds in our back pocket just ready. And I literally walked out that morning, and I told my guys, I looked at Matt and Trevor, and I said, boys, the stress is over. The birds are here. We're good. Like, and I literally said that coming out to go hunt, and that bit me in the butt, because I literally looked at them and was like, it's over. But hey, we got it. Birds are here. It's on. Well, y'all get ready, because it's fixing. You better put your blood goggles on, because it's fixing to be it's fixing to just, the next 2 weeks are going to be on. Walk out, go kill our geese. Some clients, they're eating breakfast, and I tell them, I said, hey, me and the guys, we're going to get on the road, we're going to put you a pin to the field, we're going to get there a little bit early, get the blind set up, and you know, y'all just roll in, that way I'm just stepping the blind, and you know, so on. So we left about 30 minutes ahead of them. So Morty and them were back at the house. We go to the house to get the dogs, and we pull in, and we had a bunch of stuff. I had an 18-foot trailer loaded down with stuff, and back of the truck, I don't remember what we had. We had A-frames and, you know, dog, just decoys everywhere in the back of the truck, inside the truck. And Matt, one of the guides, I told him, I said, I said, hey, let's, we didn't have no room in the truck to put the dogs. I said, look, let's just put them in the trailer, which I never did that before. I said, let's just put them in the kennels inside the front of the trailer in the side door. Oh, and thank God we opened up that side door and we're like, oh man, there's too much crap. Let's just clean the back of the truck out. Well, so we shut the door to the trailer and cleaned some stuff out of the back of the truck, put two kennels back there. I put Preacher inside the truck. He puts his dog Axel in the back. I've got two kennels back there. And so we start heading to the field and we're driving along. And Matt, I remember just looking over and seeing him. He's playing on his phone, whatnot. I just hung up from a phone call. And we're about 5 miles from the field on the highway. And I look up and there's two pronghorn coming across the road. And I mean, it was a split second. Coming from my left side, and they come across, and I just barely pulled the steering wheel off to the right a little bit, just enough to try to miss one, and there was a deep, and I was running probably 65, 70 miles an hour, and just enough to miss them. There's a deep bank right there, and the edge of the concrete had a short, like a hard, hard drop off on that concrete, and when I pulled to try to miss that pronghorn, I should have just hit him, but when I pulled that edge of that tire on my front end, caught that edge of that concrete, and there I went right off into the ditch at about 65.
Holy crap.
It was a split second, and everything would have been all right, but where I was headed, I went way down in a ditch, and there was a gravel road hitting the highway, so it was like a ramp. And a trailer and all. And the truck went sideways in the air. And I guess, I don't know, the trailer flipped in air. And the trailer hit the ground first. I know the bottom of my truck had to be the bottom of the tires had to be 4 or 5 feet off the ground. But the trailer, when it hit, it landed on its side. Chains broke. And when the chains broke, it broke off my truck. You know, everything broke, hitch and all. But when it broke, I guess the tension of it pulling on the truck straightened the truck out in the air, and it landed straight. And I don't know if thank God was with us because the truck didn't flip. You know, it was sideways in the air, and when it did, one of the kennels flipped out of the truck. I was just looking back, seeing that kennel flip down the highway. Well, that's too much going on at one time. Instantly, I think it was Preacher's kennel. Now, he's in the truck with me. And I'm sitting here thinking, he just flew out of the truck. You lose everything then. You're like, oh, my God, dog just flipped out of the truck. And then Matt looks over and he just yells, Axel. You know, I just remember hearing him yell, Axel, because his dog was in the back. We jump out, and it was just, when I jumped out and turned around, the trailer's on its side. And the front's just caved in. And I'm just like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? You know, I've got clients 20 minutes behind me. Dogs were okay, thank God. But I looked at Matt. I'm like, it's all right. Axel was okay. He didn't fly out of the truck. The only reason the other kennel flew out is because there wasn't no weight in it, you know. And it was that moment I looked, and I'm like, thank God we didn't put those dogs in that trailer. And, you know, now I'm walking in circles, scratching my head like, this is the only trailer I've got. I'm 40 hours away from my home. And what do you do? You know, what do I do? I mean, I'm on the side of a highway out in the middle of nowhere in Canada. Flip trailer. Truck, you know, back of my truck smashed in. Or not smashed, you know, I mean, it had, you know, dented up. Tail light broke. What do you do? And it's those decisions is where you've still got people there paying money, be on a hunt. The decisions from there on is where that's when you've got to make it count. Because it don't matter as an outfitter what happens to you, your personal life, the equipment you have, the amount of, you know, everything still don't matter. You still got people that are in a different country with you on a hunt. And what are you going to do? They're there for 2.5 days. You know, hey, oh, sorry, your hunt's over with. So now it's time to figure out. I mean, I didn't have no time to sit down and cry and think about all the bad things. You know, I'm just and there was a time, you know, there was a few minutes there. I walked around the side of the truck and just put my head down and just like grabbed my head. Like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do to make, you know, for a second you start feeling that feeling like I'm screwed. It's over with. I don't have, you know, the extra funds aren't there to, you know, you come to realization that, hey, these guys are here and we got to make it happen. I called one of the guys and that were a part of the group and said, look, the hunt's over with. Or I said, we can't hunt this evening. They're like, what's wrong? So we just flipped the trailer. It's gotten a wreck. Everybody's okay. And then I realized I'm screwing up. These guys are here. We've got to put them on a hunt. So about that time, the other guy pulls up. Trevor pulls up and he's like, you know, his eyes are, you know, big around his golf balls, and he's like, oh my God, what happened? So like, you know, now I'm trying to tell him, look, just let's get stuff out of the trailer. Let's get what we can. We got to get these guys on a hunt. So he pulls in. Everything in the trailer looks like a bomb went off. I mean, just everything is a wreck. So we pull out a couple A-frames, pull out two, three dozen floaters, whatever we could get. Or no, we didn't even get the A-frames. That's what it was. Well, I would grab chairs out. I couldn't even get to the A-frames. I grabbed some chairs out, grabbed two, three dozen floaters, and I said, look, just go to the pond, put these chairs in the reeds, and you know, throw out the decoys and start shooting them. Like, the house in the client's own. Well, so he takes off. He's headed to the pond. He's getting all the stuff. I'm sitting there on the side of the highway. You know, by this time, you know, what I don't know what to do. You know, there's game ward pulls up. He was headed to, I think, a hawk or something got killed, and he swung by, mate, checked on us. And about that time, here comes Marty and them. They're pulling in, and they're like, oh my God, you know, what the heck happened? And, you know, just going through the motions of that. So, I kept telling them, look, just go hunting. There's nothing y'all can do. Just go hunting. By that time, Trevor's calling me. Birds are coming in. Birds are coming. They need to get here. Birds are piling in. I'm like, oh, my God. Marty, you know, Marty didn't want to leave. He's like, man, I will feel bad. I'm like, just go. There's nothing you can do. Just go hunting. So after about 20, 30 minutes, they take off, and we take the truck, flip the trailer over, and me and Matt, you know, hook on to it with a chain, and we pull it 5 miles an hour all the way back to the guide camp, unhook it, and we're sitting there looking at it like, we're screwed. What are we gonna do? Well, wait, I can't be sitting here just pouting about it. You know why? Because we still got clients in, and we gotta make something happen this evening. We gotta go scout, find something for tomorrow morning. So I mean, and this is all within an hour and a half. You gotta start making decisions. And so we take off.
How bad was the damage to the trailer?
It's totaled. The whole front's caved in. The whole tongue's twisted. Both axles bent. You look at one side of it, looks all right. And then you go to the other side, and just the front, you know, it's a V-nose trailer. The whole, it's just concaved all in. And the whole tongue, I mean, twisted damn near. You can't even get it on a ball. And, it was done. I mean, it wasn't nothing. It's all it's good for is scrap now. So, you know, I look at Matt and I said, we got to go. So we head out, we go scouting, and we find a chute, you know. And it was about dark. I text Trevor, how'd y'all do? He said, man, we did all right. If they'd have been here earlier, we'd have really pounded them. Just, you know, it was just the fact of them getting there a little late with all the stuff that was going on. And anyway, so they shoot 30 ducks or something, me and Matt pull down there, help them. You know, by that time they done got everything picked up, and me and Matt leave, and we're in my truck. Well, there's a little thing I tell my guys in Canada. I say, look, anybody ever on the side of the road, you know, if anybody ever looks like they need help or anything, stop and see if they need some help. You never know. Might be the one guy that always told you no for permission on his field, and you never know. You might just pull up there and he have a flat tire. You might help him, and then he realized you were the guy that asked to go hunting, and you might get permission on something. Just, you know, do a good deed. Well, we pull out, and we take off, and me and Matt, we're in my truck, and we go one way, and Trevor goes down a dirt road. About that time, he sees two trucks on the side of the road. pitch dark, dirt, you know, pitch dark out in the middle of nowhere in dirt road. And he hits the brakes, rolls down the window. Hey, you gonna need any help? No, we're just sitting here watching some hunters. He said, oh, okay. The guy says, you been hunting? Yeah, we did all right. Guy jumps out. So I'm a federal game warden. And I'm like, you know, I'm not there. Trevor's like, oh, okay. So he says, you know, how'd y'all do? And he said, well, we killed 30. You know, we had all the birds separated in the back of the truck. Well, the clients went the way I went. So now Trevor's got, you know, a bunch of birds on him. And so he starts questioning, you know, they're tagged and all this mess. And he says, we want to come back to your camp. We want to come check you out. So now Trevor calls me and he's like, this is the only night that I didn't go down to the lodge. I told Marty, it's just after the day, I just need to go home and shower and get some rest. I'm just mentally beat. Don't know what we're going to do. Got to figure it out. And so now I've got two federal game wardens coming to my guide camp, check everything out, 10 o'clock at night. And that was just a, you know, it was a, what do we have? You know, is everything right? Even though you do everything by the book, you've always got that in the back of your mind. Like, you know, man, are they going to find a mess up that we accidentally messed up on? You know, it's a lot of emotions going through. You got two federal game wardens, people that can shut you down. And anyways, they come. We wind up talking to them and everything. You know, everything wound up working out. And they saw the trailer, and it was just after a day, you flip a trailer, and then you got two federal game wardens showing up, check your stuff out, check your bird logs, and all that stuff. That's a lot in one day, and so they wind up leaving. We wind up getting everything worked out, and the next morning, here we are. What are we gonna do? So we don't have a trailer. So I tell them, we run dive bomb silhouettes up there, and I tell them, let's just throw some dive bombs in the back of the truck. Let's just throw them back there, throw everything in the back of the truck, and let's go. Let's make the best of it, boys. This is all we can do. So we take off, and we go to a field, and we set up, and, boy, it was just on. I mean, it was one of those mornings, and every goose around just came in, and we pounded our specs real quick, and by God, we ran out of the back of the truck. We shot our geese. Now, my head wasn't in the game. I mean, it's hard, you know, you flip a trailer and have all that stuff going on, trying to figure out what you're going to do for the next group. And it's just a lot of stress. And I was sitting there just trying to make ends meet with my mind of what we're going to do. And we wind up making it happen. We shot our geese. And I believe that was their last hunt, and they left. And now it's, you know, you start looking at buying trailers up there, and everything in Canada is 10 times more expensive. And what trailer I bought in the States, it's 4 times as much up there. So we wind up, a local there, and there in the town has a little restaurant we all always go into, and he had a carpenter business, and he built homes and stuff. And he wound up loaning a trailer for, 2 weeks until I had another one brought up to me. And that just, that, you know, of course, the locals up there, the ones, you're friends with, they help you out, man. He did us a solid. So we're back in the business. We got a trailer. And, we're talking about the things you don't see as an outfitter. Let me tell you, October 2nd or 3rd, I had one of my big corporate groups rolling in. And literally, you know, everybody says, beginning of October, you know, you're smashing in Canada, blah, blah, blah. I'm here to tell you, there was actually two hunts I'm going to tell you about. One of them was, we're riding around. I've got 3 trucks on the road, and I actually have 4 on the road at that time, scouting. We're rolling around. You know, we're constantly calling each other. Hey, what'd you find? What'd you find? I ain't found nothing over here. And then, hey, what'd you find? Oh, I found a field, but, you know, the other outfitter or locals hunting it, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, so there was, I remember one, like I said, I believe it was October 3rd or October 4th, rolling along, and it's damn near dark. We don't know where we're hunting the next day. And 20 minutes before dark, Matt, you know, I'm calling both of them constantly. Hey, what you got? What you got? No, I ain't got nothing. I ain't found nothing. Birds in this field, they moved out. Can't find them, blah, blah, blah. And I call Matt. He says, man, there was some birds over here. I drove by the other day, and there was 1,000 geese in the field. Just go by it. And
by the time I get there, it's dang near pitch dark. Birds haven't left yet, and all I could hear is the birds in the field. I could just hear them. And I'm like, you know, boy, this is, you know, I've already had permission to hunt the field. It was one of those places, hey, just go hunt it all year. Don't, you know, you can, you ain't got to ask. Just go hunt it. So I roll by, and I roll down the window, and I can hear specks in there. I can hear Canada's, and I'm like, oh, God, you know, this, I don't feel good about this, you know. Not very confident, and roll down the window, and then they start to roll off to go back to roost, and it was dark, and they were in a big bottom on the other side of a hill, so I couldn't tell what was in there. So I said, well, let's wing it. And this is the, you know, went back and said, oh, you got us a good one for the morning. Well, I don't know. And I tell them, I said, look, tomorrow's, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I just heard a bunch of geese, and then you know, you got you one of your biggest accounts there, biggest, you know, corporate account there, and then you start telling them, well, you know, we found a field, but it wasn't really properly scouted, and then they start second guessing you, and it's like, golly, you know, but what are you going to go to tell them it's a slam dunk? You don't know. And so the next morning we get out there, and it was don't know how we were riding around before daylight, find a rock pile out in the middle, set up in it, and wound up shooting 90 something birds. And it was just, and we were right in the flight line, wound up trafficking birds, and just it happened. I'm like, golly, you know, couldn't have lucked out on that one. Well, then the next group rolls in. Yeah, I think that was their last hunt or whatever, but they just flat out pounded them. The next group rolls in, same thing. 2 days of just solid. I think they killed 560 birds in 3 days. It was just on. Just freaking, just every hunt was just pounding.
Man, there's days in guiding that I will say over my lifetime that you're supposed to kill them, man, and you go out there and it's okay. And then there's days that nobody around you's killing anything, and for some reason you smash them. Don't know why.
Yeah.
I always said those that aren't religious. I spent a lot of time praying when I was a guide. And I really gave it to God and said, that's the reason that I killed them. When some of the biggest hunt clubs in the world spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to have ducks, you know, in those days, man, you're like, oh my God. You're in the back of your mind, you're not going to say in front of the client, we weren't supposed to kill them today.
Oh, I'm fixing to tell you the best one of them all, and one that's going to relate to what you're saying about giving it to God. And I don't, I'll tell you, I'm not a perfect Christian, but I do pray a lot more than I realize, I guess. But I had a group of guys come in, just that next group after that one I was just telling you about, and they shot 560 birds in 3 days. 2 days, or that, I'm sorry, 3.5 days. They got into it 2 days. We're just pounding. And this is the kind of, you're going back to making decisions as an outfitter and what you're going to do last minute. We're rolling around one afternoon, get permission on a field, Hutterite colony, and it's just loaded. Well, loaded with geese. It was just a ton of specks in there, a bunch of snow geese. And I said, we're just going to be, and we found it pretty early in the afternoon. We still had time to go scout some other stuff. Well, I get permission on it. I go to I start looking, and then I find just a mecca. I'm just talking ducks out. I mean, it was probably 8,000-10,000 ducks in the field, and probably 15,000 geese, 20,000 geese. It was just one of those that you looked at it and you're like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is the one you shoot a monster, just a. This is the one that every hunter just dreams about, you know. And as an outfitter, you see those a couple times a year, but if you just know if the stars line and everything works out, weather, wind, just everything, if it works out, this could be the largest shoot that you ever have. And you'll have those a couple times a year where you just, or sometimes every couple years when you just see, you ever find that one spot and you're like, if everything lines up, this is it. This is the one that you're going to remember the rest of your life right here. This is it. And
So I go over there, knock on the door. Guy says, yeah, go hunt it. Go hunt it. Oh, heck yeah. Heck yeah. Well, then he says, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, talking to him for a second. And, yeah, we do this and we farm this. And I always try to get it, not get personal with them, but try to not just make them feel like I'm there just to get permission to hunt. Just, you know, talk farming with them. Talk, you know, when you go ask permission, get into their personal life a little bit to where it's not all about just you going to get permission to go hunt their stuff. You know, just make them feel like, you know, you're interested in what they do as a living too, you know. And because they always, you know, they hear your accent and where are you from? Well, Southeast Texas. And, you know, that gets into a whole nother conversation. But anyways, he tells me, he says, yeah, go ahead. And then at the end of it, a conversation, 5-10 minutes go by, he says something. Well, me and my brother farmed this. So now, back of my mind, well, your brother farms it. Well, is he okay with it? Yeah, he's out of town. He don't care. And I'm like, all right. Well, as I drive off, I start thinking, well, man, that's just an uneasy feeling because, you know, you and your brother own it or your brother owns it. You're over it. What if he's gave permission to somebody else? And then you've got that uncertainty in the back of your mind, you know, about what if he came back or what if he did give permission to somebody else? Then you roll up there with clients and you got two outfitters or you and a local or anything. So it's just in the back of my mind. And I'm like, screw it. You know what? I'm just going to hunt it. Which is a no-no in outfitting. And about that time, the other place that I had locked up for tomorrow with all the geese in it, the guy calls me. Hey, I've got some locals wanting to hunt out there. Can y'all hunt together? And I figured, heck, I might as well just do a good deed. You know what? No, man, just tell them to go ahead. I've got this other spot. It's loaded. Blah blah blah. Hey, I don't need it. You know, no big deal. Just let the locals go hunt it. You know, just trying to do a good deed. Well, now it's getting dark. Well, guess who calls me? The guy that gave me the permission for this mecca, his brother. Calls me. Hey, I heard you were wanting to hunt my place. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And go out there in the morning. He says, man, I'd let you hunt it. But and by this time, it's already dark. Done talked to clients. Got it all talked up. Got the clients pumped up. And the weather was calling for, like, I mean, it's supposed to be partly cloudy and like a 10-mile-an-hour wind. Done looked at everything. Found out where I was going to hide at and so on. Anyways, he calls me and says, look, he said, I gave him permission to the other outfitter for the next 2 days to hunt that spot.
Ooh.
And I'm like, okay, well now I shot myself in the foot because I was trying to do a good deed. I gave my other field to a local. It's dark now. I'm back at by this time, I'm already at the lodge eating with
you
my
that.
I just got it all pumped up about this hunt. And now I don't even have nowhere to go tomorrow. Okay. Well, and now he said, you can hunt it anytime after that. And I'm like, all right. So I hang up. We hang up. And now I'm scratching my head. So then I call the other outfitter. Say, hey, man, look, you know, I don't have anywhere to go tomorrow. Can I hunt it? Well, we're going to duck hunt it. I'm sitting there thinking, duck hunt it? Boy, y'all, you don't need to blow that up for an afternoon duck hunt because that thing is loaded. Like it, I guess they just drove by. I don't know what they did, but they just thought there was ducks in there. Maybe the time they saw it, it was just ducks in this field. So now I'm sitting here trying to, you know, not ask. You don't want to ask your competition for another field, but, you know, I'm sitting there contemplating. Well, then I called Don, you know, I called the landowner back and, I was like, man, look, can we just hunt to the east of there in this field to the next to it? We'll get far enough away where we don't mess up the field that they're in. And I'm just sitting here thinking, God, if something will work out, please just let something work out. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of is, you know, just get in the area, put out a big spread and put out a bunch of whites and spinners and let's see if we can pull anything off of it. 9 o'clock at night. Now, it is 9 o'clock at night. Clients eating. Fixing to go to bed, and I've got to make a decision. And I asked him, I said, look, can we hunt over there? And he says, if you get far enough away from it, you talk to the other outfitter, make sure you don't mess up that stuff, go have at it. Call the other outfitter, and he says, sure, go ahead.
He said, you know, you ain't going to mess it up. Go ahead. So, man, I'm telling you what, we wake up in the morning. You can't see 20 yards. It is pissing snow. Not in the forecast. I cannot see 20. It took me an hour to get, I don't know, 20 miles. That tells you anything. Luckily, I woke up early and looked outside, and it was just, I mean, it was just snowing. I mean, when I say snow, like a blizzard, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this ain't good. This ain't good. We get to the field, finally get there, and I'm driving in circles, can't find, my phone's not loading, can't find nowhere to hide. Now it's getting late. I've got 12 clients with me, plus a local farmer. Let's just set up right here. I can't even see where I'm at. Let's just set up. Let's just set our stuff up. So we jump out of the truck, snow blowing in the truck, blowing everywhere. And the guys are putting up the A-frames. I'm out there sticking decoys in. Now we're 20 minutes away from shooting light. And, you know, I'm late. The clients are late. We're late, you know, just because of the snow. Everything's just not working out. And I told the boys, I said, look, we got 13 people. I'll be surprised if we kill 30. Every decoy I stuck in the ground that morning, I think I ran 31 dozen dive bombs that morning and two spinners. Every decoy I stuck in the ground, I wanted to puke. And I just bent over and I was like, please, God, just let me shoot 30. Please, God, just shoot something. Please, please, just something. I'm sticking decoys. Clients get there. It's already after shooting time. And I'm tell you, when I'm late on a hunt, I get frustrated and you get that moment where you're like, God, this just ain't going to work out. Now you're rushing to do stuff. When you're rushing to do stuff, you don't do it in perfection. You know, I'm trying to get preacher out of the truck and just, you know, can't find the collar, can't find this, can't find that. And we run out in this field. And I'm going to tell you what, after I put out all those decoys and I'm sitting there praying for 30, as soon as I sit down in the blind, those birds got lost in that snow, and it was as fast as you could load your gun and say, kill them. As fast as you could say, load your gun and say, kill them, boys. There was 100, 200 mallards in the decoys, and there was, you know, 50 specks in the decoys, and there was, you know, it just Canadas, and everything was just, they were just lost. It was just that perfect morning, and we weren't on the X. And we just sat there and shot and shot and shot and shot and shot. And the guys are just looking at me like, oh, you're the man. And I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, I don't realize at 9:30 last night, this was not how this was supposed to go, which I'm glad it did. Glad it did. Had my biggest shoot ever. We killed 165 birds in about 4 hours. And the only reason we didn't kill over 200 is because one of the corporate guys had to go make a business deal at the lodge. And I'm sitting there begging him, like, come on, let's stay. This is the perfect day that you will never. And they had two 12-year-olds and sitting next to me. And I told him, I said, I'm going to look at you. I'm going to tell you right now, boys, you're 12 years old and you might not ever see this again. Just take this moment in, because this is the one hunt of a lifetime that doesn't happen every day. It don't. I mean, it just don't. You know, there's been a lot of days in Canada you'll shoot over 100, but when you just get that perfect moment, everything lines up, and it was just as fast as you could load your gun. And, you know, those guys just, you know, of course, they think you're macho man and, you know, the greatest thing that ever lived, and you're sitting there thinking, this wasn't me, this was God. You know, something else had to play in this besides me. You know what I mean? It just me, the guys, and everything else. So we wound up pulling out of there, and it was, you know, a great, great, great feeling. And they wound up leaving and shot a monster stack. And, you know, like I said, I think they killed 560 or something. And, you know, and that's another thing. You know, they leave, and we went from seeing every day driving down the road the next 3 days after they left just loaded with birds. And the day I had clients rolling in, the night before, had 7 feeds in my back pocket. 3 of us wake up. There's a 40 mile an hour north wind, and the temperature's dropping 30 degrees in a couple hours. And I literally, we're riding around. I'm calling my guys saying, what are you seeing? And I'm just hoping I'm just doing it wrong that morning. They're like, well, I ain't finding nothing. I hope you're finding something. Let me call Matt. I hope he's found something. Call him. I ain't found nothing. Well, guess what? It was too late to cancel clients because they were already in the plane headed up there. You know, and that's just stuff people don't see. That's the moment where birds are leaving Canada, and you're sitting there just like, what do? You've got clients rolling in, and your birds are leaving. They're gone. They're getting up. You're watching them get up the clouds and head south. They're headed to Montana. They're headed to the Dakotas. This is what I was talking about September 15th. This was the day I was dreading, and you never know when it's going to happen. And the clients when they land at the airport, like, well, it is what it is. We'll make the best of it. And they came, and I do not know how, but they shoot more. The next two groups shoot more birds than they did the first year they came. Don't know how it happened. I mean, it was just barely getting by at the skin of our teeth, but people not seeing it. You know what I mean? Just you were talking about earlier how, you know, you just don't see the little stuff, but the big picture. People just come in and just, they don't see it. They don't see the big picture of everybody. Yeah, they know you work hard. They see you're tired, but they don't understand stress. People, you know, just can't grasp it because they're not there with you. If you put a reality show in the truck, yeah, it might not be the most interesting for a lot, but some, it would get their attention. This is how it really goes. And that's a lot of outfitters live by that skin of their teeth, just trying to find that next feed. They live to find that next feed. And, yeah, so it was a lot of stress, a lot of stress. I'm telling you what, this season about killed me. Trying to stay on birds every day is a hard, hard life. And you got people paying good money to do it. And it's a life that you often wonder how much more you got in you to do it. And, you know, that's where I think it separates the men from the boys is knowing it's going to get rough. And if you can pull through and by God, you better have somebody else on your side than yourself. I'll say that.
And that's why we call this episode, this podcast series we've done, Driven. You got everything inside of you that Brendan has talked about the past three parts. Make it and be successful.
Yep. There's a lot of things in the last three series that, you know, if you're driven to do it, if you want to make it in the outfitting world, roll that dice and put everything you got into it. Because I'm going to tell you what, if you don't, you're going to fail. You might put everything into it and you fail again. But if you got the heart to do it, you've got the heart to make every hunt about the next person coming in, you will make it. You might have to roll that dice four or five times. You might have to fall out of a tree stand. There might be a lot of things in life, and it might take you 10, 12, 15 years to get there. But if you want it bad enough, you'll get it. That's all it boils down to. You've got to be driven, and you've got to have that fire in you to make it happen. And the struggles, it's not good on a family. It's not good, you know, being gone, and it's a hard, hard life. But if you want it, and that's who you are, and that's what you really want, you can make it happen. And when I say you, I mean whoever's listening that wants it. It's all about you. It's all about, well, not all about you, but it's all about your decisions and having that fire behind you to push you through the hard times and push you through all the stress and all that, and just keep going. Keep going. Don't let anybody get you down. If you got somebody pushing you down, God, they don't need to be in your life. You know what I mean? You just stay driven towards your dreams.
Brendan, let me ask you this. You've been around long enough to know a lot of people that have come and gone, businesses that have come and gone. If you agree with this, a lot of people jump off in this business because they love duck hunting. And you got to have that. Don't get me wrong. That's the initial, kind of like marrying somebody. You gotta have a little bit of love to marry somebody. But you got to have a reason. But at the end of the day, the people that are successful in the long term and have been doing it longer than 2 or 3 years, because there's a burnout phase in being a guide. And it's at about the 2 or 3 year mark you've got to decide if you really, really like this or not. Everybody goes through it. It's the biggest point that a lot of people fade away and say, ah, man, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm just going to hunt for myself.
Yep.
I understand. That's great, and it's fine. But to stay in this the long term, you got to know how to handle the bad days, because there's a lot of them.
And you got to
love people. You almost got to be a psychiatrist or psychologist to listen to people. Like we said back at the beginning of this podcast, to be a guide, you go duck hunting because you love it. You guide because other people love it.
Yep.
I'm not saying that you don't love it, but I'm saying if you don't find to move on from your love for it and see that people's excitement for it is more important, you can't make it as a guide. You can't make it as an outfitter.
You're going to have a lot of stress, mentally stress of telling yourself, I'm going to tell you, Rocky, and people don't see this, and I've gone through it in the last year, and heck, I still go through it. There is times you question yourself why you do it. You got guys roll out and you're waiting on the next group and you're sitting there realizing you're 60 days into a season and you're fixing to leave Canada and go do another 60 days in Oklahoma and you're sitting there wondering why. It's like you're lost. You're lost in hunting people rolling in. They're smiling. They leave. You talk to them a year later. There's a lot of mental stuff that you think about daily and you struggle with why you do it. But there's the days that you have that best hunt and you have those clients that roll in and they're smiling and they're happy and they're, man, this is the best. I've been hunting 50, 60 years and this is the best time I ever had. And you're realizing you did that for them. You made that one moment, I had a guy this year, he was on that hunt I was just telling you about with the snow, big dog trainer back in Texas, and he's retired from it. You know, not in real good health, and he's, you know, 65, 70 years old, and he looked at me and he said, I want to tell you what, I've been hunting for 50 years, or 55, 60 years, whatever it was. So this is the best hunt I've ever been on. And it was, and he goes, and it's not the number of birds we killed. It was more the camaraderie and everything that went into that hunt. He just had a good time there with his grandkids and there, you know, there with his son. And you realize, like, man, this is why I do it. This is because you just had a guy that's been doing it and has hunted all over the world, Argentina, South Africa for birds. And they realize that you just made that one moment perfect for him, his son, his grandchild. And it's something that drives, that's when that moment of you telling yourself you don't know why you do it. And by the time, you tell yourself that, you'll have that one moment that shows you why. It shows you why you do it.
And I agree with everything you just said. And I always thought back exactly the way you're explaining. I call it the golf effect. What brings us back to I don't play golf anymore, but it was what always brought me back to a golf course. There was always one shot. No matter how bad you're playing, there was one shot that brought you back that you thought that you could build upon.
Yep.
And that's
yep.
the same way it is in duck hunting. You see a kid kill his first duck or a guy kill a band. You were there for their hole in ones.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you talk about those guys burning out in 2 and 3 years. I've seen a lot of talent come in this game between Oklahoma at Goose Reapers and just knowing people that were very talented, but they just didn't have that one. You know, there's great hunters, there's great guys, there's great everything, but they get burned out because it's just not their calling. And you're talking about that hole in one. It's the person that has that calling that is there for that one moment with their client and on with them and making sure it's their trip of the lifetime. Whether you only talk to them once a year or not, or a couple times a year, you know, checking up on their hunt. It's that one. It's like you live for that next feed, for that next moment with that client. It's almost an addiction.
it's a weird, I hate to call it an addiction, but you know, there's a lot of addictions in life that you just crave. You don't know why you want it. You push yourself to it. You don't know why the days you struggle for that client. And it's just a good feeling. It's a good feeling. You know, it's I guess like a doctor, you know, going in and curing somebody of something. It's having that one moment that you know, it's a life that this guy's 65, 70 years old. He might not live to be 10 more years, but when he dies, that I know that he had that one moment he lived for to be with him and his family on that one hunt. Or you had that one guy that was 30 years old and had a 10-year-old kid, or, you know, 8-year-old kid that shot his first duck or first turkey or first deer with you. And that's that one picture that's going to sit in their house for the rest of their life and realize that one moment with my son was the greatest moment of my life. But he'll always remember that you, I don't want to sound selfish, like he'll always remember you, but he'll always remember that moment. And that moment is the moment that drives me to do the best I can. You know, he may forget about me in 20 years, but that's the moment that one guy lived for.
You're probably going to end up on their desk, a shelf in their office at their house. You're in that picture. You become a part of somebody's life. You know,
you do.
One of the most memorable moments of their life. I have never been able to express that into words, and you did it today. What a great spot to end this series. Because that's what it's about.
I appreciate everything, Rocky, and I appreciate you letting me tell the story and maybe helping those that have those hard times of wanting to give up 2-3 years into it, to making that decision, whether it's, you know, you want to do it for the rest of your life or you don't. Just know, stay driven towards whatever you're going to do. And, you know, there's going to be people that support you. There's going to be people that's not. There's going to be, you know, hopefully family that supports you. But just stay driven to what you know, what you really want in life. Just, you got to stay there. And I hope this podcast series helps out with anybody that's, you know, struggling to being a guide and just need a little motivation to help them. So I appreciate you listening to my story and everybody listening to it. So,
hey, we didn't say anything politically incorrect today, did we? God, I don't want any more people offended.
Well, you know, I probably did, but hey, if that offends you, then hey, I'm sorry, you know, go pick up golf.
My old saying before I became a little bit of a changed man, 2 tears in a bucket.
if you got offended by anything I said, hey, that's, you might want to rethink a lot in life, because if I'm ignorant to this podcast,
that's what a great significant body.
So,
what a great series, Brennan. Thank you again, bud. I've really, really enjoyed it. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckDuck.com.